supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Thanks for joining us for a special Thanksgiving edition of NewsWorks Tonight. Ahead this evening, we'll look at Philadelphia's role in the history of some Thanksgiving traditions. As Americans are giving thanks and enjoying their holiday dinner, we too are focusing on gratitude and food. The cooks out there are surely grateful. The turkey's cooked, the side dishes all assembled, hopefully without too many mishaps. But right after the big meal comes the question of leftovers. NewsWorks Tonight producer Kimberly Haas asked a few Philadelphia chefs if they have a recipe for Thanksgiving leftovers. First up, Michael Solomonov focuses on the part of the meal that many feel truly defines Thanksgiving dinner.
I love leftovers. I'm a big proponent of leftovers in general. Whenever I eat Thanksgiving, I'm like a stuffing freak. You know, that's kind of like the thing that I crave the most. I feel like leftover stuffing is sort of the epitome of comfort, you know? I actually look forward to leftovers and sort of other parts a lot more than I do like a roasted turkey. I'm not that excited by roast turkey, to be honest with you. And I think Thanksgiving is kind of a weird food holiday. I don't understand all the starch, you know? It's like so many different kinds of like mashed potatoes or dairy, and then I get sweet potatoes with marshmallows, like in theory, you know, but it's like a little bit hard after like one or two bites. But what's really good is taking cold stuffing and slicing it and then searing it. You get this sort of fried polenta, this crispy exterior. And if you, you know, it's a cross cut, so you get like the bits of the celery and the onion that also sort of caramelize, and it's good. It tastes like fried rillette, which is really nice. And then if you get a little leftover gravy or a little bit of like your turkey broth and a little of like the turkey dark meat, and you sort of shred it and throw it into this liquid and then dump it on top of this crispy stuffing, you have something I think really, really special. And I haven't done this yet, but the idea of using stuffing slices as bread for a turkey sandwich would be pretty awesome. I don't know if people have like done that before. I think this year for Thanksgiving, I'm literally just going to make like a green salad and eat stuffing. You know, keep it simple.
That's Michael Solomonov, chef and owner of Zahav Restaurant. Well, before tackling what to do with leftovers, cooks first have to make it through the meal. For many, roasting a big turkey is a once-a-year proposition, and a daunting one at that. Where to turn for help? Each Thanksgiving, for more than 30 years, Butterball has run their Turkey Talk Line. Operating from October to December, trained professionals answer thousands of turkey-related questions from home cooks across the United States and Canada. The public radio series StoryCorps met up with two of them. Marge Clindera spent decades teaching home economics to Illinois middle and high school students. As she was transitioning into retirement, she started looking for other ways to share her years of knowledge and experience. In 1983, she began working at the Seasonal Call Center, answering questions from those needing last-minute information on cooking a turkey. At StoryCorps, Marge sat down with her longtime co-worker, Carol Miller, to remember some of their best callers, as well as some of the best advice they dished out.
We like to say we kind of deal with turkey trauma.
It may be as simple as, they left the giblets in the turkey. Oh my gosh, I've ruined Thanksgiving.
I always remember the call from a young bride. She was kind of whispering on the phone, and I asked her, why are you whispering? And she said, well, I don't want my mother and mother-in-law to know I'm calling you, but they're having this argument about which was the right way to do things. Well, she was very relieved when I told her it was her mother who had the right solution.
Yeah, but she had to go tell her mother-in-law she was wrong.
I remember one time I talked to a guy, he wanted to propose on Thanksgiving Day. He wanted to mix the diamond ring in the stuffing and then stuff it inside the turkey. So, you know, I convinced him that that wasn't a good idea for a number of reasons. We decided together that he should tie it on a drumstick, get down with a platter on one knee and propose. Every year I think about him. And it's my wish that someday maybe he might call and say, hey, we made it for 30 years.
Right. You know, we do get people who are lonely and they're almost making up a scenario that they want to share and they need to talk to somebody. It really is heartwarming to hold their hands. We're kind of like their mom or their grandma.
I think that's one of the best parts about our job. They are so grateful that you're there. People say, you mean you've given up Thanksgiving for all these years? And I never feel like I've ever given anything up. Do we think we were going to do it for over 30 years?
Right.
No.
It makes them feel good, and it certainly makes us feel good, too.
Marge Glendera and Carol Miller recalling their times as Butterball Hotline workers. Their StoryCorps conversation is archived in the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress. A 1621 harvest celebration at Plymouth in New England is commonly recognized as the first Thanksgiving in America. Pennsylvania has plenty of history and tradition around the holiday as well. And for that, let's talk turkey with Dr. Lee Arnold, Senior Director of the Library and Collections and Chief Operating Officer of the Historical Society of Pennsylvania. Dr. Arnold, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, 1621, and so why did it take till 1941 for the holiday to become certified as a national holiday in the United States of America?
That's right. 1621 was when the first sort of feast happened. And it depends on what people define as what Thanksgiving is. So that wasn't necessarily a feast.
A religious holiday in large measure initially.
Yes, but it was in 1623 that it really was sort of the religious and the feasting. And so some people say 1623 is really, really the first one because it's about giving thanks to God for, again, good crops.
Where was that one held?
It was also held in Plymouth. And the very first one, there were Native Americans at the first Thanksgiving, the Wampanoags. And then you get in 1789 in Philadelphia, George Washington proclaimed the last Thursday of November as a national day of Thanksgiving. And that was because of the institution of a Republican form of government. The Constitution went into effect in 1789, but it really wasn't necessarily a let's eat kind of thing. So again, you're back to sort of just the prayerfulness of it.
And that's where we can bring a Philadelphian into the mix, one Sarah Josepha Hale.
That's right. Actually, she's a little later than that. She lives in Boston for a while as an editor of a very popular ladies' magazine that was bought out by someone in Philadelphia. She moved to Philadelphia in 1841 and then started a campaign, a letter-writing campaign, to have the last Thursday in November designated as a national Thanksgiving. And finally, in 1863, Abraham Lincoln proclaimed it sort of after Gettysburg. He believed there was a need for a national Thanksgiving. But it was because of her that's our first Philadelphia connection with Thanksgiving.
Now, I've heard it said that had Hale had her way, the Thanksgiving turkey would have been replaced by a little lamb.
And that's because she is the author of Mary Had a Little Lamb.
Which she wrote, penned apparently a decade prior to
getting
invested in changing the holiday around.
That's right. She had a collection of poems and things for children. Right?
So now take us from Abraham Lincoln, fast forward to World War II, 1941.
Right. So the national celebration of Thanksgiving didn't quite happen, even though Lincoln proclaimed it, because of the South. So the Confederate States of America, because they didn't recognize Lincoln as their president, they didn't recognize that they would have to celebrate Thanksgiving either. So it was only during Reconstruction that both the North and the South started celebrating Thanksgiving together. It was always sort of in November. And then under President Roosevelt, he tried to move it to the third Thursday of November, and that just caused an upheaval. People were like, it's always towards the end of the month. And so by a joint resolution of Congress in 1941, he proclaimed it as the fourth Thursday of November. And so that's where we get 1941, where it's established as the, a fixed date nationally. Interesting, and it was 100 years since Sarah Josepha Hale moved to Philadelphia and began her letter-writing campaign. So 100 years later, it was sort of codified on that date.
And nowadays, people eat turkey, watch football, and the Macy's Day Parade, but apparently Philadelphia had the Macy's Parade beat by some 4 years.
Absolutely, by 4 years. So one of the things that Philadelphia always has to do is to always compare ourselves to New York. And
Is it a winning proposition?
Well, I think in some people's minds it's not, but as a Philadelphian, of course, no one can compete with us. You know, we're the first national government, the first capital, and we're also the very first Thanksgiving Day parade sponsored by Gimbel's Department Store and in 1920. And again, 4 years after that, because Gimbel's also had a store in New York, and there's rivalry between the New York Gimbels and Macy's, they created their parade in 1924, but ours was first, and ours is the oldest continually operating Thanksgiving Day parade in the country.
Thanks so much for shedding light on Philadelphia and all things Thanksgiving.
Oh, you're welcome.
Dr. Lee Arnold, Senior Director of the Library and Collections and Chief Operating Officer at the Historical Society of Pennsylvania. You can hear more of our conversation at newsworks.org. So, the big meal has been cooked. Many have already eaten and are parked in front of the football game in a tryptophan fog. Now what? NewsWorks Tonight producer Kimberly Haas has some ideas on how to spend the rest of the holiday weekend.
As Thanksgiving winds down, some of us are looking forward to 3 more days of leisure. Of course, many will be hitting the stores tomorrow, but for an alternative to Black Friday, the Philadelphia region has a lot to offer. To squeeze in a bit more outside time before the cold winter sets in, the skating rink at Penn's Landing opens for the season tomorrow. You can also skate at Dilworth Park right in the shadow of City Hall. New this year, Dilworth Park and Greater Philadelphia Gardens are also hosting a pop-up maze constructed of seasonal shrubbery and decorations. But if you'd prefer to stay indoors, 2 family-friendly exhibits open tomorrow. The Franklin Institute will have Jurassic World, with animatronic versions of Tyrannosaurus Rex, Stegosaurus, the 25-foot Brachiosaurus, and other dinosaurs. While the Jurassic Park movies it's inspired by are fiction, the exhibit focuses on real science. And also on the parkway, the Academy of Natural Sciences of Drexel University is hosting a wild wizarding weekend. Public engagement manager Mary Bailey says that many magical stories have a basis in science.
So we are going to be talking about the mythology and the real animals that inspire mythology. For example, did you know that the story of the Cyclops came from finding elephant skulls?
And of course, the minute Thanksgiving is over, that means Christmas is here, with lots of opportunities to view holiday sights. For the traditional-minded, the Macy's Holiday Light Show starts tomorrow, set to music played on the Wanamaker Grand Organ. Another Christmas classic is the model railroad display that starts up tomorrow at Reading Terminal Market. For more holiday lights, there's Franklin Square Park and the show in the lobby of the Comcast building. And of course, if you can't resist a bit of shopping, the Christmas Village that's usually at Love Park has moved to City Hall this year and kicks off this weekend. For WHYY, I'm Kimberly Haas.
You can check out these and other events happening this weekend with the Entertainment Guide at newsworks.org/guide. Still ahead, we've been talking quite a bit about food on this Thanksgiving, but the holiday is for giving thanks beyond that.
Project Home showed me a different light on how they wanted to end homelessness, and they gave me the tools that I needed.
NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY. Welcome back to our special Thanksgiving edition of NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. The turkey may be the centerpiece on many Thanksgiving tables, but when you ask folks about their favorite dishes, it's the sides that usually make the meal special. And side dishes mean vegetables. So when thinking about what to do with all those Thanksgiving leftover vegetable dishes, we went to the experts. Kate Jacoby and Rich Landau are the vegan chefs behind the Philadelphia restaurants Veg, V Street, and Whiz Kid.
It was late one night by the pale moonlight, all the vegetables gave a spree.
I was thinking doing like shepherd's pie. So almost everybody has some sort of mashed potato, or you could even do a layer of stuffing in there. So if you have a protein, we've done roasted seitan, roasted tofu, we've done mushrooms, we've done all kinds of stuff. And then put that in the bottom with some of your mushrooms and some of your, you know, roasted carrots that we've done. You can do a layer of, we've done like shredded cabbage salads and roasted squash. So it can be all kinds of colors under there. And then you just go on top with your mashed potatoes. And, you know, that's nice. You got a casserole ready to go.
Well, there's two ways to go about doing your leftovers. There's the people that save all their scraps and the people that throw away all their scraps. I'm a big fan of not wasting anything at all. So if you save all your mushroom trimmings and the stems and, you know, your broccoli stems, you can make a great vegetable stock the day after. And that can become the base of everything that you do. I'm a huge soup fan this time of year. So if you want to make your own vegetable stock, char up the vegetables first in a little bit of Nutri-Oil, such as sunflower oil or canola oil, something like that, safflower. Char them up really well, and then just put a little bit of water on them, and just let them simmer for about 20, 25 minutes. You don't need to cook a vegetable stock forever. That's a French myth, that you need to simmer a vegetable stock for an hour. By the time you get those vegetables out, they're dead, and that's how your broth is going to taste, dead. So you really want to keep it bright and alive. So start with a vegetable stock and then just throw in some of your leftovers and see what comes around. You might want to thicken it with a little bit of potato, thicken it with a little bit of flour. Add some rice in there, cook in the rice and let the rice slowly thicken it. And have all these little bits of your vegetables, bits of, you know, squash and green bean and broccoli and mushroom just swimming in this really beautiful, rich vegetable broth. That to me is Thanksgiving in a bowl the day after.
Beautiful soup, so rich.
That's Veg restaurant chefs Rich Landau and Kate Jacobi. Earlier, we heard a Thanksgiving classic story from the popular NPR feature StoryCorps. Throughout the weekend, StoryCorps is sponsoring the Great Thanksgiving Listen, inviting listeners to use an app to record their stories. High school students from across the country are creating personal oral histories by interviewing with elders. Here at WHYY, we started a bit early and are featuring our local conversations this week. Luke Risher is a high school senior at Science Leadership Academy in Philadelphia. His dad works for Project Home. It's an organization providing housing and resources for people who are homeless. There, Luke met David Brown, a man who left home at an early age because of family problems, lived on the streets for many years, and now works to help end homelessness. The two came to our studios to talk.
You know, you're homeless for how long was it?
25 years.
25 years. Well, how did that begin? Like, what started that?
Well, it was a struggle. Like, I never went to high school. I never learned how to read or write.
So once you got into a hard place, you just kind of had nowhere to go?
Nowhere to go. And when I went to the shelter system is just, they didn't give you what you needed at that time. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't really care about the human beings. You know, I mean, they just cared about the statistics. And Project Home showed me a different light on how they wanted to end homelessness. And they brought me in to their organization. And I've been with them for the last 5 years. And I wouldn't trade this life for the world now.
What did daily life look like for you?
Well, the daily life for us became, it was like, the free library became a place for us to wash up in the bathroom. We hung in there because it was a warm, safe haven for us. It was a warm place. We did a lot of dumpster dive-ins. We ate out of trash cans. Every night we would visit people like Papa John's. We would go down there and get their last pizzas and food. So that was a daily routine for us.
I mean, it gets so cold in the winters. Like, how'd you?
We had so many blankets. Once you get underneath them blankets, you don't even think about the coldness because you're warm. And the body heat right there just accumulates you, you know what I mean? So the cold wasn't the issue. The issue more times was in the summertime because it was so hot and we had no place to go, you know, so.
What were the first steps coming out of homelessness?
Well, the first steps coming out of homelessness, like when I moved in, it took me exactly 4 to 5 weeks to learn how to sleep in a bed. I slept on my floor. I had to learn everything again like a baby. I had to learn how to clean. I had to learn how to go shopping. I had to learn how to do independent living. And Project Homes gave me the tools that I needed. They took me to doctor's appointments. They took me to job specialists and things of that nature. So it all came together.
Like, if you have one message to convey to everyone, both homeless and not homeless, what would that be?
Well, my message would be to the homeless is seek help and really, 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 really want help. We have a lot of obstacles out there, you know, and if you just ask for help and be sincere in it and be committed to it, it's help out there for you, but you have to want it. And then my answer to the other people would be to just reach out to them. Just reach out to them. Show them a little kindness. I'm not saying give them money. I'm saying show them some kindness. Give them a address where they can go get help. Give them a sense of pride, a sense of dignity, you know. Just don't walk by them like they don't exist.
Well, thank you for sharing. It's always powerful. And yeah, I think it's an amazing story and amazing what you do, like your vocation. So thank you.
And I thank you.
We've come to the time in the season when family and friends gather near.
Philadelphia High School senior Luke Risher talking with David Brown as part of StoryCorps' Great Thanksgiving Listen. It's not too late to add your story to the mix. Go to thegreatlisten.org to learn how. That's all for this evening's special Thanksgiving edition of Newsworks Tonight. Our show is produced by Shai Benyakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us, and from all of us at Newsworks Tonight and WHYY, happy Thanksgiving. I'm Dave Heller for Newsworks Tonight.
And this year when I count my blessings, I'm thanking the Lord He made you. And this year when I count my blessings,